Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And Jim Garrity is unexpectedly off today. Al Gore, after selling Current TV, apparently shut down part of the internet too, so Jim is unable to join us. But Daniel Foster, the news editor at National Review Online, is here in his stead. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and Dan, we'll get to Al Gore's latest business venture a little bit later in our conversation today, but the good news for today is that after a bruising, to some extent splintering, vote over the fiscal cliff, Republicans do seem to be licking the wounds and bracing themselves for a much more positive fight, we hope, when it comes to the debate over extending the debt ceiling here in the next few weeks. Pat Toomey, one of Jim's favorites, senator from Pennsylvania, was on Morning Joe today and basically said that Republicans have to be willing to be ready and accept a temporary partial government shutdown if, in fact, that's what's necessary to push forward real spending cuts, real entitlement reforms, and so forth. Here's what he had to say.
We Republicans need to be willing to tolerate a temporary partial government shutdown, which is what that could mean, and insist that we get off the road to Greece, because that's a road we're on right now. We only can solve this problem by getting spending under control and restructuring the entitlement programs. No, there is no tax solution to this.
Right.
It's a spending solution. And this president doesn't want to go there. We're going to have to force it,
right,
and we're going to have to force it over the debt ceiling.
Now, Dan, what hasn't changed, of course, is that the Democrats have the White House and the Senate, so yet to see how much progress Republicans can make here. But the fact that they're actually willing to take that step when in the past they haven't means that they're at least playing a little bit harder version of hardball here.
They've set up this debt ceiling fight for about 2 months from now in an endless series of cliffs now for the foreseeable future with the sequester and the debt ceiling. But I think people are already being a bit hasty in making assumptions that things will go the same way then that they did in the last few days. The fact of the matter is, Ramesh Panuru here pointed out yesterday, and it's exactly right, is that raising our debt ceiling is way, way, way less popular than letting the Bush tax rates expire on the middle class. So immediately it gives Republicans a PR advantage. And, you know, there's a lot of dissatisfied Republicans in the caucus, obviously, who were not happy with the way things went on the fiscal cliff fight. They, you know, let Speaker Boehner know it. Presumably he holds on to his gavel. But, you know, I don't think there's going to be the kind of special dispensations with, you know, sly asides from Grover Norquist allowing Republicans to vote on what's technically a tax increase. I don't think you're going to see any of those dynamics repeat themselves 2 months from now. So I think it's just going to be a completely different dynamic. And I think Toomey's on the right track that Republicans are going to toe a harder line.
We certainly hope so. They've taken a beating from the right middle and left when it came to this fiscal cliff debate. So we'll see if they do, in fact, use their higher ground to the greatest advantage and actually have some real spending cuts and real entitlement reforms. It's good to know that people want to see the debt ceiling not raised, but if it is a matter of the debt ceiling being raised or the thing they care about being cut, we'll see which side they end up on. That's always the big problem with that. On to martini number two now, and Dan, hitting close to home. Chris Christie yesterday going after John Boehner seems to be the most popular thing to do in politics these days. Absolutely apoplectic, as was Peter King, Michael Grimm, and some other members of Congress about the fact that the 112th Congress, especially in the House, did not vote on Hurricane Sandy relief after the fiscal cliff vote on New Year's Day. Here's Chris Christie laying into the House Republican majority in a couple different ways on Wednesday.
There's only one group to blame for the continued suffering of these innocent victims, the House majority and their speaker, John Boehner.
I was given no explanation. I was called at 11:20 last night by Leader Cantor and told that authority for the vote was pulled by the Speaker. And our delegation asked for a meeting with the Speaker at the time. They were refused. I called the Speaker four times last night after 11:20, and he did not take my calls. So you'd have to ask the Speaker.
Okay, a couple of things here, Dan. First of all, anyone who's looked at the bill, and Christie says there's no pork in it, which is just simply not the case. So if you hated this particular version of the bill and that's why Boehner didn't bring it forward, I think that's actually a pretty good decision. They're going to bring a $9 billion relief bill forward later this week that doesn't have the pork in it, and we'll see what happens from there. But for Christie to do this, my guess is it's partially because there are so many people hurting, and also because it's an election year, he doesn't want to look like he's taking it easy on his own party, but it's not endearing him. This whole Hurricane Sandy thing has not been good for him in terms of his national prospects or the way conservatives feel about Chris Christie.
No, and I've been a pretty stolid defender of the governor, and I've long been a fan of his. But I thought that, as you know, and I said so yesterday, I thought those comments, especially the idea that House Republicans are to blame for continued suffering, were just wildly careless, way over the top. And I think almost everybody who matters in terms of Christie's prospects, certainly at the national level in the Republican Party, probably felt the same way. I don't think that's venturing too hazardous of a guess there. The other thing is, as you said, you know, this was a porky $60 billion bill. I don't know why the argument wasn't, hey, it's those darn Senate Democrats' fault for not passing the House version of the bill in the 112th, which was $27 billion, which everybody agreed on. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't get the blame, but, you know, like you said, everybody seems to have it in for John Boehner the last couple of weeks. And the other thing is, you know, as I joked at the time, what could John Boehner have been so busy doing Tuesday night that he couldn't take a phone call from somebody whose vote he didn't need? You know, it's not like Boehner didn't have anything to do. He could take every one of Christie's four phone calls. You know, and the other thing is that there is already a great deal of emergency spending underway. There, you know, $8 billion from FEMA. Hundreds and hundreds of billion dollars in private fundraising from charitable groups that's already being deployed to victims of Sandy. Being a local, I understand, I see firsthand, people are still hurting, and certainly this is the sort of thing that FEMA is around for, if it's around for anything. And so there, you know, should be some bill passed. But the fact of the matter is, the emergency spending has already started. We're talking about long-term recovery money. The bill that the Senate passed had, you know, roof repairs for Washington, D.C., and water, you know, access money for Alaska in it. And, you know, that's not going to help victims of Sandy in the next couple of weeks. You know, and even if that pork stays in the bill, I'm pretty sure Alaska can wait for its water money for another couple of days until the 113th kicks in. So I just thought this was way out of order by Governor Christie, and I hope he comes back to earth.
Even if rum will be less expensive, I think this is probably the smart move by Republicans to oppose this type of pork, and to think that it's just a punitive assault on the people of New Jersey or New York is pretty short-sighted. But on to martini number three now, and the crazy martini, and the news broke yesterday afternoon. Al Jazeera is buying Al Gore's current TV. I'm sure that'll be a ratings bonanza. I'm sure the coverage of Israel will be fair and balanced by merging those two entities. Dan, I'm not sure exactly what Al Gore was looking to do other than beat the tax deadline here, but bringing these two together is not exactly going to make it a favorite of conservatives, I'm pretty sure.
I saw that and I just thought, oh, come on, it's too easy. You know, it's the kind of thing, you know, that if it happened on April 1st, you would have immediately thought, oh, that's a good one. And it gets better. I saw a report that that The Blaze was looking to buy Current, but they were rejected by the progressives at Current TV, but Al Jazeera is just fine. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know what to say. I've heard some great puns, Al Gorzira, which sounds a little bit like Al Godzilla. So you might put it up against Mothra or King Kong in some pretty cool sci-fi movie. I can't wait to see what the coverage is going to be like. Apparently, it's going to be an American-centered network, but 40% of it's going to come from Qatar. So maybe they'll bring Keith Olbermann back, and we'll get to see Keith Olbermann in traditional Qatari garb, and should be entertaining. Look forward to seeing it this in 2013.
Yeah, not sure they're going to be much more of a player, but it shows exactly the type of folks that the progressives over at Current TV are willing to do business with. As you mentioned, apparently these folks are more palatable than Glenn Beck. But Dan, the new year's off to some very strange starts in a lot of ways, but it's never dull. Thanks, as always, for pinch hitting.
Thanks a lot.
Dan Foster of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Jim and I on Friday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.